Hello and welcome to For the Love of Truth. This is episode 226 and is another in the Back to Health series. Today I'm speaking to Sid, or Psycho Sid as he goes by the name on his book. Sid has a very interesting story to tell. About a decade ago, he was diagnosed with stage 4 inoperable throat cancer and given just 6 months to live. He was offered chemotherapy and radiotherapy in an attempt to extend his life, and these treatments invariably made him incredibly sick and even more frail than he was before. During the course of these treatments, his wife announced that she was leaving him and left him to look after two young children, as well as try and work out how he was going to keep himself alive to look after them. Now, I'm not going to say too much more about the story. I'm going to leave that to Sid to tell. Sid is living in the Far East now, and the last time we tried to hook up and speak, the connection died. This time we did have some problems and the line was a little crackly. But regardless of that, Sid tells an amazing story and is a real story of what is possible when you focus and when you have little choice. And if you'd like to read a copy of Sid's book, you can find an affiliate link in the description and the first comment of this video or in the podcast notes. And if you have a health story that you'd like to share with me, then I'd like to talk to you about that. The very best way to reach me is to go to fortheloveoftruth.co.uk and go to the Contact Us page. And there'll be a link in the description of this podcast to allow you to do that. And you guys are amazing, and I look forward to speaking to you in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye. So, hey, buddy. Thanks so much for joining me on the show. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks, Adrian. Lovely to see you again, and I'm happy to be here.
Likewise. Likewise. You have quite an amazing story to tell, my mate. And I wonder whether you could do us the honor of taking us on a little journey from what life was like living where you were living in paradise to what happened, and then kind of just take us through that, if that's all right.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes fact is stranger than fiction. So what do you want, my early life or?
Well, I think really, I mean, you grew up on a council estate, didn't you?
Yeah.
Manchester.
Yeah, loving family, council estate. I became a Manchester City supporter because my dad took me there. Uh-huh. I stopped eating meat in a meat-eating family when I was 5 years old. I just refused to eat it. And luckily, in those days, I was allowed to continue just eating fruit and veg. So it's quite unusual. I was the only kid at school not to have meat in his school dinner, much to the dinner lady's eye-rolling and... You're not going to go up to be a big, strong lad, are you? If you don't get your meat, you won't have any pudding and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, I grew up there and had a number of jobs, interesting jobs. I managed a transport company. I used to work in criminal law. So I met rapists, murderers, burglars and visited prisons.
Wow.
And suddenly saw the folly of working when I should be living the dream. So in 1988, I thought, enough of working in an office or wherever just to save up enough money to have a few beers at the weekend or a couple of weeks holiday in the summer.
Yeah.
I got me back an offer left. So that's really, and I've never really wanted to work in that kind of environment again. I just like being free.
Okay, so where did you go?
I went to Singapore, so I'd never been to the tropics before, and I ended up in Singapore.
Yeah.
And the first thing I noticed, wow, it's hot and humid. And
especially compared to Manchester.
Yeah, a bit different to Manchester, for sure. I remember going in an Indian restaurant, and they didn't have any plates, and they just fed us the curry and rice on a banana leaf, and I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, wow, you know. And temples and the traffic and the different spices and smells of the Orient. I moved on through Malaysia and I'd given up beer and everything. I was being a bit spiritual, meditating and trying to sort of like journey to the East to find my true self. And
yeah.
I ended up getting drunk on Tiger Beer once and woke up the following morning, never again. But it was a good trip.
Yeah.
Here's something that was surprising because, that was 1988. After a long train journey. I was going to Penang in Malaysia, Georgetown. After a long train journey, I was absolutely knackered and frazzled. And as I'm walking to find like a backpacker guest house, I saw a massage. Now, I pictured it as a massage. And I thought, that'll be great. I could do with that. I treat myself. And I went in this room.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting there. And a bloody girl we got in underwear comes out and starts massaging me. I'm like, my goodness, what's going on here, man? And anyway, what happened in that little tale's in the book, so you'll have to find the book.
Oh, that's right. You've written a book, haven't you, Sid?
Yeah, The Death and Life of Psycho Sid, Part 1, Foxtrot Uniform Charlie Kilo. What else do you say? All my chapters and book titles are named after songs.
Yeah.
And that's a song by a band called the Bloodhound Gang, an American band.
Yeah.
And it's just what you say when what happened to me. Yeah. And anyway, the book's out and it's doing rather well.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to that. So you've gone to the Orient. I presume you settled down there at some point rather than just travelled around, didn't you?
Yeah, I travelled around in Thailand, tropical islands, went back to Manchester. And I thought, what am I doing back here? It's cold and grey and raining. So I got me God-given arse back out to the Far East and started teaching English, proper English, like a Mancunian accent, and seemed to do rather well and became a popular teacher.
Yeah.
Then I got offered a job in a sugar factory in the Northeast. So I enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, I had a child with a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
We split up. My child stayed with me. Then I met another woman. We got married and eventually had two kids.
How lovely.
Yeah, so it's all right. And most of my time over in the Far East was exploring mountains, forests, islands, jungles.
Mm-hmm.
I've always had this adventure in me. And,
mm-hmm.
So it was out. Whenever I had a free moment, I'd be off in a national park to try and find a remote waterfall or something like that.
Okay, that sounds interesting. So, I presume then, did you get some kind of work? Did you get a nice job? Did you have a house? What were you doing?
I got in the sugar factory, I got a job. I got a free house, free car. I only had to work 3 hours a day and everything was free, so it's quite good. Mm. And that's where I learned the language, the Thai language, because nobody spoke English. So I'm like, I'm going to the market, banana, banana. I go, blue-eye, blue-eye, oh, blue-eye. And so I picked it up quickly.
Mm-hmm.
After I got married to the Thai lady, we went to England and started a tour company. That would have been 1997.
Mm-hmm.
We met Thais at the airport and took them to places like Chester, London, Conway,
mm-hmm.
and did little tours. But that only lasted a short while because the economic collapse happened in 97 and no one had any money.
Mm-hmm.
So I became a taxi driver. And I love that as well, but was missing the tropics.
Yeah.
And one day in the back of my taxi, an elderly couple heard my story and said, we offer you a job teaching in a primary school in China, Shenzhen. So I said, I'm up for it. And I went and told the missus, we're off to China. She said, no, we're not. I said, yes, we are. And we went. I opened a company, Global Student Network, and recruited students for boarding schools in the UK, did quite well. And opened my own language centre and did all right. The marriage lasted about 8 years, so when it got to the year 2000, he left with my daughter, who was one at the time, Francesca, so my daughter was born in China. And Eugene, who was almost three, stayed with me. So she's gone. And that was quite heartbreaking. But I knew it was better that the relationship finished, but I missed my daughter, of course. So what I did then, I thought, I'm not working teaching English. I'd made some money from my school and everything. Mm-hmm. So I spent a year travelling around wild parts of China with my 2 and then 3 year old son in Laos. Really wow. obscure places. And that is like one hell of an adventure.
Yeah.
Into minority tribes, no electricity mm-hmm. or anything. And a shower was we'd get in the river and shower. But it was brilliant. And so that was quite fun. I've got all that on film as well.
Mm.
That's a future book. Careful with that backpack, Eugene, which is a play on the Pink Floyd song, Careful with that axe, Eugene.
Yeah.
It's a future one when I get time.
Good.
So we came back to England and managed to stay there a year, and off we went again. And we ended up in Laos.
Okay.
Ended up teaching English. And Eugene went to a little international primary school,
mm-hmm.
and everything was okay.
Yeah.
We got a big truck going past in the background. And one of those things that changes your life.
Yeah.
I spent most of my time in the gym and swimming, and I'd have a few beers with my friends and play pool in the evenings.
Yeah.
One night I was drunk, and I'm driving on my motorcycle back home.
Mm-hmm.
No problem there. If you get stopped by the police, it was £2 fine, and then carry on. You were drunk, so, you know, not like England. And there was this seedy nightclub called the Chess Cafe.
Yeah.
And it was opposite the hospital. I thought, I'll have one last drink before I go home. And I went in and I got a bottle of beer now. And I saw this very good looking girl at the bar. And I thought, oh, yeah. And I was that drunk. And you said, hiya, my name's Sid. And wrote, here's my phone number. Give us a ring sometime. And then staggered out and went home and woke up with an hangover. The next day she phoned. And I remember Manchester City were playing Newcastle. I was watching it.
Yeah.
So being a proper Mancunian, I invited her to the pub
yeah.
to come and watch the football.
Yeah.
And the problem was I couldn't remember what she looked like because I had my beer goggles on the night before. And bloody hell. Anyway, this tasty woman comes up, hello, Sid. And we watched the football. My team won.
Yeah.
We had a good time, but we never became lovers, just platonic.
Yeah.
I should occasionally meet for lunch.
Yeah.
One lunchtime, this very, very attractive girl came along with her who was smiling and flirting with me.
Yeah.
But she was a lot younger than me, and I didn't want to end up as one of these sad expats with a girlfriend half his age. That wasn't what I was looking for.
Yeah.
And she was flirting. I said, you're very pretty, but you're not the one for me. You're far too young. But she came to my house one time. And me being a bit of a Mancunian devil, well, I had to do what came naturally after a few beers. And from that moment in time, before I knew it, she moved in and we became lovers. And she was a beautiful relationship. I didn't bother about her age after that. She could have been twice my age. When yeah. I fall in love, I fall head over the heels
yeah.
and wear me on my psychedelic shirt sleeve.
Yeah.
And so I got a great job with a sugar company, not a sugar company, hydropower company,
uh-huh.
which pays top money. Well, you know, for out there, probably about five grand a month after tax,
wow.
the house. And, you know, when you think everything was so cheap in Laos,
mm-hmm.
so we'd have holidays in Hong Kong and islands. And we got married, we had a Joe. And I was like, January 2011, I was like, I found what I'm looking for. I bought a house,
mm-hmm.
got an SUV for adventures, the perfect place and the perfect partner. I loved the NTN. It was so
mm-hmm.
laid back with temples and avenues
mm-hmm.
and the Mekong River. This was mm-hmm. it. I was so certain it had achieved what I was looking for. But I failed to read the writing on the monastery wall,
okay.
which warns nothing is permanent. Everything is transitory. Everything changes. And sure enough, it did change.
Mm-hmm.
Within the blink of an eye, I'm out of tropical paradise and I'm in Blackpool, freezing my knackers off. I'm the wind and the rain. Worse than that, they've diagnosed me with stage 4 inoperable cancer.
Whoa.
And then, yes, that's it. And it's got DS 1500 form, the clinical nurse gave me, which screened terminal illness, maximum life expectancy 6 months. Well, bloody hell, I am in the brown and nasty. And so what am I going to do? I looked at my wife and kids, and I was more concerned about them.
Mm.
I wasn't afraid of dying. Mm. I was afraid that I'd miss them. I really love my wife and, of course, my kids.
Mm.
And I was devoted. And it was terrifying. I silently screamed and walked out.
Wait, what year was this again?
This would have been 2012, April 2012. Oh, okay. So I've been told I've got a maximum of 6 months to live. I said to the clinical nurse, this means I'm going to die. She said, well, it's very aggressive, very large. It's in my face. We can't put it out. I'm so very sorry. I said, well, what's this for? She said, if you give it to the benefit or anywhere else, you'll always have preferential treatment. If you need any money,
mm-hmm.
you won't be interviewed or anything. You'll be looked after.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't sure what to do. And so I went to see the oncologist.
Mm-hmm.
And said, all we can do to save you, to extend your life, try and extend your survival time,
mm.
is to give you 3 sessions of chemotherapy.
Hmm.
Now, I've got a clue. I haven't a Scooby-Doo what about any other possibility.
Hmm.
I said, okay, let's go for it. And, you know, and then they fixed. So I went there and they were going to put a pump on me as well. I continued pumping chemotherapy drugs into me for the next, I think it was the next 7 days or from recollection. So I went there. I went to the, it was in Preston, and I went in the chemotherapy lounge and sat with my chemical brothers and sisters there. And
yeah.
3 different drugs went in, and it's quite boring. You know, it's just the only thing that was a nuisance, if I wanted to go and have a quick pee, I'd have to take this frame with me. I was pumping it in. And I went home, and that was it. I thought, well, that's now, is it? And I woke up the next day, and it was total madness. It was an insane nightmare. The feeling, the sensations, there wasn't confusion. At times I thought I was sleeping under the pier on Blackpool Beach, and my body was trying to reject everything that's coming out, popping it all out. Obviously, my body's saying, I'm not having this shit in me.
And
I'm spitting up, green vomit, day and night, coughing. And it's a nightmare. I had to wait for 5 days. I would have a nurse come every day
mm-hmm.
and visit me at home and have loads of injections, and 5 days for them to take the pump, still pumping it in.
Jesus.
And she took it off. I went, thank goodness for that. She said, sorry, it gets a lot worse now. And my goodness. Yeah, I thought, what? She said, it's still in you, it'll get worse. And the next day, it was worse. It clapped. And I got my wife to...
I thought this stuff was to extend your life.
Pardon?
I thought this was to extend your life.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought, well, and I'll come to that in a minute. So from suddenly, I wasn't well, but suddenly I was in a wheelchair. My wife had to get a taxi, push me in a wheelchair. I looked like bloody death warmed up there. And the oncologist took one look. Straight in, and I was in an isolation ward for 7 days. And the nurse would try to say, get your eggs and eat. And I said, I don't want to eat. I'll have a bit of vegetable vegan soup. And he had loads of different potions that I had to drink. I don't remember what they were. It might come to me, but there was a pink one that really was very painful to drink. I don't remember. It might come to me while I'm speaking. Anyway, so I'm getting them down. And everything's a blur. My brother brought my wife, she'd visit me. And everything was... And after 7 days, I suddenly started to feel better and they let me go home.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I was a bit worried and concerned. And the oncologist said, have a second. We'll give you a second one with different drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And a lower dosage. They did that. Same thing happened. I'm in A&E. I'm spewing up alien green vomit, bright day glow, emerald shite coming out of my sphincter. And I'm like, my brother's there, he's dying, and they're banging me on, and I'm pumping me full of injections. And I was in there for another 8 or 9 days in a blur. They cut a hole in my stomach to give me a peg tube. I said, why are you doing this? Said, you won't be able to eat soon. Eat soon, you'll need this to stay alive, to feed yourself. And they cut a hole. And I felt it all. They said, we used to do this under general anaesthetic, but now, last week, we're not doing that anymore. We're just giving it and sprayed something down. And I could feel it. But, and I had two guys, camera down there and a knife, and tricking it on the inside. It wasn't nice. And anyway, I'm back out of there. Eventually sent home. The oncologist said, can't give you any more because it'll kill you. Your body is rejecting it. I went, oh. So what are you going to do next? What's going to happen now? Said, all we can do is give you radiotherapy. We can burn it.
I was going to say, so now they move from poisoning to burning you to make you better.
Yeah, so and we'll give you a small dosage of chemotherapy, which boosts it incredibly. And he said, but I must warn you, A, it's got hardly any chance of being successful, maybe a 1 in 5 chance of making any difference to extend your life. It'll be the most painful nightmare you've ever been through, and it'll have lifelong effects for as long as you after the treatment. As long as you survive, it will have lifelong effects. That'll affect.
I'm not liking the sound of this, you know.
I said, well, I'm not going for that, mate. You know, I mean, there's a little bit to live, a bit of time to live.
Yeah.
I don't want to be bloody burned. I'm already gone through a nightmare with a poison. I don't want to be in bloody agony.
Yeah.
So I said, but rather than burning my bridge, I just said, well, give us a couple of weeks to think about it. Is it something quite serious? So that way, determined not to do it.
Yeah.
Everyone was saying, it's up to you. A lot of people at the local cancer group were saying, go for it, go for it. It's your last chance. You'll be dead otherwise. And I said, I'm not sure. And at the last minute, I decided to go for it. I looked at my kids and wife, decided to go for it. I didn't have any other knowledge. The only knowledge that most of the times I've got been given out by the medical media. That's it, you know. This is what you see. You get cancer, you do chemo, you have surgery, chemo, radiotherapy, and then, you know, if all is well, you'll get better. So I went for that, and that was the most pain. At first, it wasn't painful, but it was very claustrophobic, a mask on, and the machine zapping round and burning, and once a week blood test, and they could hardly get the blood out because the chemotherapy had knackered all my veins. So that was a struggle. Took the bloody teeth out because they'd been destroyed by the chemo, by the radiotherapy burning round here. So I lost all my teeth because of that. I had 6 weeks of that from week number 4.5. That was it. Agony, and I'm telling you, like drinking scalding water 24/7. It was intense. I was burnt and red and blistered on the outside. The inside was worse.
Jesus.
And then morphine, as much as I could have. I had bags of morphine, tramadol, and all sorts, and it still just tickled the pain. So I was in a bad way, and I'd lost. I was like a skeleton, and. Eventually, it was over, and I went through it started to ease off, but I went through about 4 months of agony, and it started to ease off.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, what happened next, so I'm fighting away, and I'm starting to, I've decided what I'm going to do is cut out every single bit of process. I started reading then about natural methods. I'm going to cut out every bit of processed food, nothing out of a tin, nothing out of a packet. I'd always been vegetarian since the age of 5, but I was a young vegetarian before I got the cancer. 4 cheese pizzas, 4 pints of beer, Diet Coke, bags of crisps, Mars bars, and all that rubbish, chip butties. and so I cut it all out. I religiously stuck to this, just organic fruit. Loads of juices, beetroot juice, carrot juice, grapes, and I just stuck at it. And I had lots of other minerals and substances that I took as well, milk thistle and all kinds of stuff. I had a big, my ammunition was in a big pack. Every day I'd be taking all these different substances, vitamin C, multivitamins, all sorts of stuff. And I kept fighting. And about a year, and I was still alive a year and a half later. And, and every month I'd have to go and have an endoscopy. And I never got the all clear and say, well, you're doing okay. Put some weight on. Get a stake down, and all the usual things. And then my mum died. Then my mum died. I thought, bloody hell. And my mum was, so I kept that inside, but I collapsed. So I was in Lancaster. I took the wife and kids to Lancaster. And I had they had loads of snacks and food. And all I had was agamorphine and some liquid. And that was it. And we had a little holiday in Lancaster in Waltham. And I just phoned my brother up to find out. And his wife answered, said, sorry, your mum died. She's in the funeral parlour. No point to me. I'm like, what? And I collapsed. And the next day, it was that numb feeling. All I could do was remember. I disguised my pain. I always had done with wife and kids. I tried to put on a happy, go lucky, upbeat kind of guy, not the fears of dying and the pain, hid the pain. And same I did with my mum, but as I'm walking along with them, memories are coming back. When I was a kid and I was sat on her knee and she'd read the stories and the kind of things she did, how she'd always support me. So it's quite painful. And that happened. And then my wife, who had been loyal to, I'd loved, I'd never strayed or anything, suddenly started turning nasty. And I'm thinking, what's up? And one day I'm like, I'm on my sixth, I call it my sixth sofa, lying on my sixth sofa. And she was always on the tablet. And she looked over and she went, did she really say that? And that's when I thought, I'm gone. Now I'm in big shit. My goodness. And the cancer's killing me and my wife murdering my soul. And she got nasty. I said, hurry up and die. Quite blatantly. Nicknamed me Ghostface because I look like a bloody skeleton with bone face. Told me Ghostface, hurry up and die. And I'm like, what? Why are you doing this? I've never been unfaithful. I've given everything I've got. Discovered she was having an affair. She boasted and taunted and mocked. I've got a nice rich boyfriend and said to my son, who was only 3 or 4 at the time, got a nice, handsome, healthy husband here in the future. And I'm starting to lose control, man. I went to meditation to try and focus, to still my mind when I'm going to die. My wife's having an affair, my mum's died. It wasn't easy. No. So I was, in the end, could take no more. I knew if it carried on, I had nothing to lose. I'm going to die anyway. Yeah. So if I top her and I top the geezer, that's giving her one. I'm not blaming him. If a pretty girl's got any, he may not even know. He may not even know she's got a husband. Or they both might know. I'm waiting like bloody vultures for me to die. I didn't know. In the end, I thought, don't go down that route. So I decided to take her back. I cancelled the visa. She was waiting for a visa. Like a bloody idiot, flew me and my son. My elder son stayed with some friends. And we flew back to Laos. Now, Laos, this was, looking back, this was very bloody dangerous. I was in her country. I was in her territory. Very sick. And I brought my son there. I thought, no, I can't last any longer. So what happened? Flew back and got into Laos. Mum and dad and family, all right. And then when they found out what she'd been up to, they sympathised with me and said, sorry, she's so hot-headed. So she wouldn't be seen with me. She said, "You're far too ugly, I'm ashamed to be seen near you." And I did look like a bloody monster. I looked like the Elephant Man's ugly brother after the kicking her dad. And I tell you, a bit like Gollum Gurning. I didn't look good at all. And I remember I went to the pub to watch. I treated on my birthday. So that would have been 2013. Well, at 57, I might have been. Manchester City were playing Manchester United in a derby. And I went to the Mekong River and to watch the screen in the pub. And I had two mates, a Man United fan, Wobbly Bobbly, and a Norwegian guy. And Wobbly Bobbly is Liverpool, and a Norwegian guy. And I sat there. And people had come in the pub, and they walked right past me. That's how much of the change from. And then they turned around. "Seed, is that you?" And yeah. "I thought you were dead. What's happening?" Mm. You know, and they couldn't believe it. Anyway, my team won. I went home. Eventually, it was going. My wife kicked us out of the house. She said, "This is my house, and I bought it with all the money I'd worked for. It was in her name. Get off my land and take him with you." So at the end, pissed off, we came back to the UK and I carried on fighting the cancer. That really, I was heartbroken. I was confused, but I had no choice. I had two kids, one 16 and the other 6, and they're just devoting the time to them. And that would have been up to about 2015. And I was lonely. I was heartbroken. It was boring. That it was like I was just cooking, cleaning, storerooms after living so free. And I felt like an old man, just living on his memories. I remember when I was in mountains in China or in the jungles or in an island, and I just carried on. So that's where we get to 2015. So what do you think of it so far, Ben?
I'm spellbound and I'm close to tears at some of that.
Right. So the next thing that happened, I wanted to get back to necrotics now. I've had enough of living a gloomy existence, getting clothes from charity shops, looking for bargains here, there and everywhere. And so I decided to write a book. Well, no, actually, in 2006, I decided to write a book. That was it. And I started writing a book in 2016. And I called it The Death and Life of Psycho Sid, Part 1, Foxtrot Uniform.
It's a cracking, by the way, for those listening to it, you want to read the book. It's a cracking read, but we'll get to that later on.
Yeah, and anyway, I started writing it and decided to be a bit of a cheeky northern monkey and get pre-orders, and they started coming in. And in 2016, I was speaking to someone, a girl who pre-ordered, an Italian girl, a vegan, and we were chatting away, and she arranged to come and meet me at Blackpool Station, and I thought, great, you know, I wasn't thinking anything, because, I mean, the missus, when she left, said, "You're too ugly. No one will ever love you again. You'll die an ugly old man." And I believed her. So my spirit was broken. Anyway, this woman came, and she was a tasty-looking woman, 20 years my junior. I'm doing all right. I think, well, it's all right, her being 20 years my junior. But the way the cancer's altered me now, I'm 70 years. She's 70 years her junior, so this bloody aged me. Anyway, she comes along, and as soon as we saw each other, that was it. I knew she was going to stay the night. I don't know why. And she knew. And we had a wonderful relationship. And it gave me some confidence for about a year. And she was great with the kids that played with Joe and taught me to cook some better meals for the kids. And that was something that was quite special to have actually someone who said, "Sid, I love you." I never thought anyone would say that. And I get messages on Facebook, "Sid, you are amazing, I love you." And I never believe that I said that again. The relationship ended, but in 2017, and I was okay about that. I knew it was right. It was right. She needed a freedom. I was still a bloody mess. put other hands options on. But we still remain good friends and still are now. So that was nice. What should I talk about next?
Well, you're clearly not in England anymore. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about how you and I first met and then you ended up getting out to the tropics again.
All right. So after a relationship, I carried on writing.
Yep.
And I thought the book might take me 6 months to finish. It took me 4 years.
Yeah.
I was just so much of a perfectionist, and I liked to twist words, and I never knew how it did. I thought it was okay, and eventually, I printed. I got an editor to help, so he did help.
Yeah.
And then what I did, I printed, I think, 750 copies.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent some to the people that had already pre-ordered. And the others went more or less immediately, and another set. And the printers had made a small error, moved the words too near. And I said, look, you know, I spent 4 years doing this, and you made a small error. Mm-hmm. So they sent me another 750. So I managed to get 15, and they went, they more or less went. And suddenly the feedback was coming, best book I've ever read, can't believe it. And I went, what? Me? Me? I got thrown out of school. How can my book be the best? And I've just had that ever since. I went around the UK doing inspirational talks.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke at places like Anfield, Murrayfield, Edgbaston. Mm-hmm. I even spoke at our arch enemies, Old Trafford. And I'm a City fan, Manchester United. And when I went to Old Trafford, this would have been 2019.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Old Trafford. And at the beginning, there they all are. I've got my Psycho Sid, the death and life of Psycho Sid, Fox Rock Uniform. And I went there and I said, Blue Moon, you saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart, without a love in my home. Now they're all United fans. I expected boos, and all I got were cheers. And I'm thinking, hang on, you're Man United. I'm Man City. I'm singing a City song. Why are you cheering? He said, don't let the Scousers win the Premier League. So they hated Liverpool more than City. And it was when Liverpool and City were neck and neck.
Yeah.
And that went down well. So the book did really well.
Yeah.
But by the time I paid for editing and then the money you get from Amazon probably $2.50 a book after they sell it for 13 quid or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I didn't have enough for the dream to go back home to the tropics where I'd spent and take my son and daughter, my own son. I didn't have, so I thought, what am I going to do? And the book was still doing okay. So I decided to form a vegan tour company. So I did it all, and lots of people were interested.
Yeah.
And the waiting list, let's go with you, said I showed them which island we'd go, what activities, a vegan cookery class, volunteering in an animal, all these, and they loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was suddenly kiboshed. You know why?
COVID.
Why did that go wrong?
That'd be COVID, yeah.
COVID. And I thought, blinking heck. And I'm a bit of a tinfoil hatter. I thought, what? The money's stopping me because of the bloody flu. What's on about? What's going on about?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I wasn't worried about the COVID, to be honest with you. And I'm very sceptical now, but I behave myself. And I don't know. I mean, you think a lot about that as well, don't you? So
yeah, I've done a few videos about it, yeah.
Yeah, so, but I just keep myself to myself. I'm over on... Well, we'll get to that anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, COVID stopped it, and then we get locked down. And I thought, I'm thinking, how am I going to, I'm never going to get back now.
Yeah.
It's going to be, you know. And then it started to ease off in March, April 2020.
Yeah, which is right around when you and I started talking, wasn't it?
Yeah, and obviously, I thought, well, the way it looks to me is that once the winter comes, November, there's going to be lockdown very, very strict, because obviously you get all the winter coming in, and I think this is going to last for a long time. So I need out before the end of September to be certain I can escape.
Mm-hmm.
How can I do that? I've got a pot to piss in, really. I mean, the book's not really making any money.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to do that? A mate of mine suggested doing a crowdfunder. I thought, no, I felt a bit embarrassed. I think I might have mentioned that to you as well, didn't I?
You did, because we talked about creating a video and a few other things to help you along your way. And I just said, mate, you got to go for it, because I believe in you and I know your story.
Yeah. So I went for it. And amazingly, when he came in, now there was a bit of a hiccup, because the borders were closed into Thailand. And that was where I really wanted to go. So I was going to have to go to Mexico. I wanted out. I wanted freedom again.
Hmm.
But can you hear that?
No.
Not anyway, it's a mosque in the background. It's the island where I'm staying is a mixture of Buddhist and Islam.
Right.
And so he's giving his call. And so, call to prayer, that's it.
Yeah.
So anyway, the embassy, Thai embassy in London, country, said, oh, you can go because you've got Thai kids there, I've got the eldest daughter, and your son has got an approval letter for an international school that my friend runs.
Yeah.
So he said, I'll sort you out. So we were suddenly going. And then there were so many things we had to do. We had to get mandatory insurance for each of us for covering us for, I think, $100,000. Certificate, fit to fly. We even had to do a COVID test. Now, I wasn't a big fan of having a COVID test, but I thought, well, I'm not going to get out any other way.
Mm-hmm.
So we did, and it made my eyes water. But after what I've been through with all the cancer, it was a doggle. So, and my little boy had one. He didn't like it. And so we eventually got the visa, booked the flight, and off we flew. And I'm like, now, I love my scappy. So he couldn't fly until a month later because he had to have a rabies shot, and it had to be a certain time. And we had to do 14-day quarantine.
Yep.
I
remember watching the videos you made on that.
It was a bit of a, for some reason, the quarantine hotel was a bit of a blur. I've got vague memories. And we just locked in. They'd leave the food at the door, and it was bland, really, but we got the cheapest place possible, and it was okay. And it was the vegetarian festival time, so we could order out to the local 7-Eleven mini mart, and they'd give us some veggie things as well. The son played Xbox, and I just made videos and looked on the internet. And after that, we were out, and I met my daughter, who I'd not seen for ages, and that was fabulous. And then waited for Alfie, the staffy, to arrive. He arrived at the airport. We were dancing. He was obviously made up.
Yeah.
And that would have been the 1st of October. 16th of October, we were released from the quarantine. Alfie arrived on the, I think it was the 6th of November.
Mm-hmm.
7th, we had to get to the island. No planes. We didn't want Alfie on a plane again.
No.
Difficult to take him on buses and trains. So we had to get a taxi, which was a 12-hour taxi drive to the island with Alfie in. And that was, and all the way, it'd be a storm, like sunshine, a storm, but it was interesting.
Yeah.
And we eventually got here, moved into a little, like, bungalow on the beach.
Yeah.
And they did it for free. It's only tiny, I think it's normally only about 6 or 7 quid. So the dog, right on the beach, we were in the sea and it was hot.
Yeah.
Then we found a brilliant house with a big garden, tropical garden, air conditioned, 2 bedrooms, living room fully furnished.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's $250 a month.
Wow.
Which, I mean, I had a 2-up, 2-down terraced house in Blackpool for $540 a month. So it was a massive garden with palm trees. And Alfie was surprised one day, because he looked up and he saw loads of monkeys on the roof and he didn't know what they were and just went back mad and started barking and off he went. That's been it. And Joe's in the international school. He loves it.
Yeah.
I remarkably, it's like I'm like a walking miracle. I shouldn't be here. I'm alive. Yep. I'm living a dream.
Yeah.
And I'm writing book too.
Yeah, and you're still mindful about what you eat and everything, I presume.
I mean, yes. Your thoughts, yeah.
No, I was going to say you're still mindful about, you know, you manage your food carefully and what you eat, don't you?
I'm a lot better. I'm still having the odd, you know, round of bread and things, obviously. So I'm thinking, seriously thinking of going on another detox, maybe a mono fruit detox for a while, just dragon fruit for 7 days. I think that's good at clearing me out. Mm-hmm. But I'll be mindful and watch. If I start to get too many healing reactions, I'll slow it down with some steam bed or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I don't think you're allowed to send herbs to Thailand. I don't think you can. There's a lot of herbs and things I like, but I'll have to speak to some people that know, because I did like taking a lot of herbs when I was back in the UK. I tried borax, that one, didn't I? And someone sent me.
You said that really cleared your head, didn't you?
It did. It made a huge difference. So here I am, living the dream. Every Sunday we go on an adventure. We went to the Emerald Cave and got more. 20 of us clubbed together. We got a speedboat, very cheap now because they're no tourists. And we just went to deserted beaches, jungles, and swam into this cave. And it's amazing because you go up about 80 meters and you come out to a beach. And it's a hidden beach. There's no way in and out except the cave. And you look up and it's like a circle, like a volcano. So I did that. And all these things, it's like, wow. So I'm writing little e-books every month about, there'll be like three parts.
Well, let's just stop there a second, because I just want to give everyone an introduction, because you now need to start making some money in order to survive and stay there, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, my old age pension, because I'm a bit of a copying dog here, as it's quite clearly obvious, doesn't start for 18 months. My book's starting to do better.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't really spend any money now. We just buy some veg and fruit. And, you know, we've had things like beans on toast and things like that, mashed buds, but which I should be doing more fruit. And we don't spend a lot now. We're being very careful. But I thought, well, how can I supplement my income?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a couple of hundred quid a month from royalties and things, and from a few subscriptions from friends, he said, a tenner a month. I could obviously teach online, but that would take up all the time from my writing, which people seem to love. Mm-hmm. So I came up with the idea of doing e-books, and the e-book will be in two parts. The first part will be a guide. Lonely Planet-esque, what to see, where to go, what to do, but written in my style, and I'm there, so I'm giving it there as it is. And the second part will be my adventure there, getting there, what I saw. And so it's a little, loads of colourful images of book taken. So it'll be a little guide to different places on the island, different beaches or waterfalls, and nearby islands that people can see it.
Mm-hmm.
They can actually find out how to get there, what to see there, what you can do there, where you can buy food, where to stay, and other different options and bits of history. And the second part is me. Well, I'm buzzing this morning to the remote island of Scott Rock. I've dreamed about this island for years, you know, and that kind of thing.
Okay.
And then there's always a little twist because something went wrong. It always does. And each chapter's named. Each little bit's named after a song, like in the book. So that Psycho Sid was a DJ.
Yeah.
So that's where the name comes from.
Okay, all right.
I was Psychedelic Sid originally. I was a hippie, and then when I was DJing punk and indie, they said, you can't be Psychedelic, and it's almost Psycho Sid. And that was my DJ name, which has stuck like super glue ever since. So that's it, really.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do then. I will put a link to the book in the description and the first comment of this video and on my website as well. I would really recommend that people buy the book and read it. It's an amazing read. And if you would keep me posted as and when you are releasing more of your ebooks, and I'll make sure I can put a link across to that. And maybe we can have another chat about that nearer the time when you're ready to do that as well, if that's all right.
Yeah, probably monthly. I'm looking at doing them monthly. Little ebooks, maybe 40 pages. And I've had to learn a new skill to make an ebook, and I've got it now. It looks all right, actually.
Good.
And I was quite chuffed yesterday. My book. Mm-hmm. I have no publisher, no backing, nothing, no marketing or anything. And in oncology nutrition, it got up to number 9 in the top 10. Me and all the other books around me are like How Not to Die, Michael Greger and things. And there's me, my ugly face there, in all these amazing books. How the hell did I do that? And it got to the number 10,014 of all books on Amazon. And there's millions on there. And I thought, how did I do that? How did I become a writer? No idea. But
well, especially since you got turfed out of school, didn't you? You got kicked out of school, didn't you?
Yeah, for having long hair. What happened? I was a bit of a rebel. I had long hair, and they said, cut it. And I said, no. So he said, so he expelled me. And as I walked out, opened the school gates and walked out, I felt like powerful. And as I walked along the path towards Nirvana, and I smelt the autumn air, and it smelled like Teen Spirit.
Yeah,
I'm not going to obey. And I've never obeyed ever since. That's why people think I'm a bit of a crackpot when I question everything. I don't follow the mainstream media.
No.
I'll look at both sides. I'll think, right, you're saying this and you're saying that. And I'm not willing to blindly follow and look into things. And I think there's a lot more to life than just slaving away in some shit job that you don't like.
Yeah.
I mean, and we're much more. I mean, we're trillions of cells. Our cells are vibrating. And it's like, wow. If you live in the moment, suddenly you can see more. You've got to look inside. You know all this anyway.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, one of the questions I've wanted to ask you since I first met you was, given what you've been through in your life, if you could talk to Sid when he was in his 20s, what would you say to him?
Early 20s?
Yeah. Some advice from where you are now with the wise head you've got now.
Stop being a mere monster. That's no good. Stop staying in a relationship that's dead already just because you're afraid of being on your own. That's doing you no good. Stop being more. And get the hell out of this country and start exploring the world. Live the dream. That's what I would say. But I would also say, treat everyone with love and compassion. Be wise. Treat everyone with love. Treat everyone. And look at the wonders in the world and amazing waterfalls, rainbows. And love is always the answer. So, and obviously, when you've got a 19 or 20-year-old there, it's quite difficult to drum it in. He'd probably say, oh, dear, that's old bugger. I'm going out on the piss and I'm on the hump for another bit of skirt. I know what the young kid would have said. And with his lads and watching football. But I would have said, we've got way. And explore the planet. Meditate. I used to meditate even at that age occasionally. And it did bring me into the moment.
Hmm.
But as we all know, trying to meditate and stay focused is very difficult as our naughty monkey minds are grabbing thoughts in and everywhere. Sometimes I meditate. And I thought, something I never even remembered for like 20 years or something. Something a teacher or a friend said.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
Yeah.
Weird. That's it. So I just say, I probably say, you know, don't drink beer, stop eating loads of junk food and don't smoke cigarettes and all this kind of stuff. And try and eat healthier.
Yeah.
It's not easy putting an old head on your shoulders, as we all know.
No, it's not. It's not. Mate, that was a really magical discussion. Thank you very much. I will get this all put together, edited up over the next couple of days, and I'll send you the links across when I've done it, and I'll do what I can to tidy the audio up because it's been a bit glitchy at times today.
You're a hero. Take care, mate.
Look after yourself, buddy. Take care. I'll speak to you soon, yeah?
All right, yeah. Cheers, Adrian. Thanks for that.
Cheers, buddy. Thanks, mate. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.